Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
So yeah, like I said earlier, we're so glad you guys are here tonight. We're going to continue on this path of GPS and trying to figure out what it is that maybe God might be directing us towards and what instruments he might use if he were going to direct us. And so tonight, like I said, we're going to talk about your P. So last week we talked about G for your gifts. This week we're talking about your P, which of course would be your passion, your passions. And so before we get real deep into that, I think we have a misconception of what passion might be sometimes in our lives. So I want to tell you a story about when I was younger and sort of coming up into manhood. I had a group of buddies, and we all decided that we wanted to be rock stars, which is really interesting because none of us were musicians, interestingly enough. But we decided we want to be in a band, we want to start a band, we want to be rock stars. And so we just decided, well, we'll learn how to play. So you get an instrument, I'll get an instrument, whatever, I'll do what I have to do, we'll figure something out. And to tell you the truth, this might shock you, but when we got together, we weren't very good. That might be surprising. In fact, I remember we played this one party in particular, and we actually got food thrown at us. Yeah, like it really happens. You're like, no, it only happens in movies. No, it really happened. We literally got food thrown at us. And so we came out from that and we said, man, something's got to change. We got to get better. We have to be determined to get better because that can't happen again. And so we hunkered down in a garage. We were the quintessential garage band. So we got hunkered down in a garage and we honed our craft. We got better. We really did get better. And so, you know, we were ambitious, certainly. You know, we were motivated, yes. Some might have said, well, you were passionate. But again, I think it's a wrong use of the term, and we'll talk more about that later. But we certainly had ambition, and so we honed our craft, and we got quite good. In fact, we started playing in clubs and bars. When I was about 18, not quite 19 yet, we started playing in clubs and bars that I wasn't even old enough to be in. I mean, the law was you had to be 21, and we were playing all these clubs and bars. And I'm a fresh-faced 18-year-old just getting ready to turn 19, and so we're getting introduced to an entire new world that we were not quite prepared for. And so there were these different clubs that we played often, and one club in particular was called Cafe Loco. So you know, crazy things happening there, right? So, but my buddy, I just remember there was a group of people who often frequented the same club, and they were kind of like regulars at a club, and sometimes even groupies of bands at that local level, which to me was kind of shocking. I was like, how pathetic is your life that you're a groupie of a local band? But anyway, it happens. And so there were these people who would often frequent the club, and my buddy Paul, there was this one girl in particular, she's a little older than us, of course, an older lady, and he was quite smitten with her. He was quite taken with her. And he was trying to improve his play skills, and so he was constantly talking about maybe approaching her, and he would say, oh, I like her so much, and we'd be like, dude, you don't even know her, man. You just need to go talk to her. Start a conversation. He's like, I don't know what I would say, and we're like, hey, man, well, how about this? How about that? And we were trying to give him tips, and we said, hey, why don't you just go approach her, and we'll stay off, like, in the wing. We'll be like your wingmen. I'm pretty sure that term wasn't even used back in 1988. But, you know, we were like, really what we wanted to do was stay in the shadows and just laugh at him as he made a fool of himself. You understand, right? So we were like, just go talk to her, and we'll just stay over, and we'll give you cues and stuff. We'll help you. And so he's like, all right, I'm going to go talk to her. And so turns out he was actually pretty good at it. He walked up to her and he was like, hey, how you doing? And she said, hey, how are you? She's a little coy, you know. She's like, how are you? And he was like, I'm good. Yeah, I've seen you around here a lot. I play in one of the local bands. And she said, yeah, I know. I've seen you guys. I've seen you play. And he said, really, what do you think? And we're like, no, don't ask that. That's the killer right there. If she's like, you stink, it's over. But she said, no, I like you guys. You guys are really good. And we're all like, yeah. So he was like, oh, cool. And so then she plays this card. She pulls this one out. She says, you know, I'm a little chilly. It's a little chilly in here tonight, isn't it? And so he handled this like a total pro, seriously, because he was working the whole blazer look, the Don Johnson look. Anybody? Yeah, the whole T-shirt, blazer. Yeah, he was working that look. And so she says, I'm a little chilly and I'm a little cold. And he's like, no problem. How about I just give you my jacket? And we were like, smooth. And so she's like, oh, really? And so he offers her a jacket and she takes the jacket, drapes it over her shoulders, and it's like this perfect scene. And she says, wow, chivalry is not dead. And he's like, what's chivalry? And we're like, no, shut up. You're a gentleman. You're going, dude. It's good. And so she's like, this is so great. And so finally we're like, hey, man, you should ask for a dance. We're giving them the, you know, because that's the signal that the wingmen give for dance. So anyway, so he was like, hey, would you like to dance? And she said, oh, I'd love to, but if you don't mind, I'm just going to keep your jacket. And she puts her arms through his jacket that he loaned her, and she's like, ooh, is that your scent? I like your scent. And she's very coy, right? And so they make their way out to the dance floor, and they begin to dance to a song that, well, probably sounded something like this. Because it was the 80s, right? And so he's doing his thing. He's doing all hip style. He's keeping it tight, right? He's doing this move right here. But she's breaking this out right here. Because, you know, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Because that's what we did back in the 80s. And then she starts this move right here. And then she does this little move. Because, you know, that kind of dancing is extremely alluring. You know, that's the kind of move right there. Because, like, I'm working it. But then she pulls a move out that I have to tell you, he was completely ill-prepared for. What she does is, she takes the very jacket, the very blazer that he loaned her, dips it off her shoulder to expose her bare shoulder, this quadrant, leans in, takes her shoulder, and rubs it right up his chest. And this is how he responds. And he literally didn't recover. He just turned around and started walking away like this. And we were all like, abort! Abort! Sure, get out of there! It's too much! Get out! And so, yeah. So he literally froze up, left the dance floor. And you know what I think happened to my buddy Paul in that situation? It's something I think happens to a lot of us in our lives. I think there are these times in our lives where we get caught in a moment that's just so big, and we weren't prepared for it. I mean, it might even be a moment that we desired to be in. We might have said, I want to go down this road. But then suddenly, certain circumstances just fall together and something happens and it's way too big for us. We just kind of freeze up. We're just like, whoa, I'm not ready for this. This is bigger than me. And so what I'd like to do tonight is talk to you about a couple of different stories in the Bible. There's actually dozens in the Bible like this, but we don't have that kind of time. But I didn't want to limit it to just one because I want you to see there's a pattern in the scriptures of what happens when people face moments that are just huge. The type of moments that would make most of us just freeze up. Make most of us just say, this is way too big for me. I thought I wanted something good, but no, this is way bigger than me. But what happens when you get someone with right-centered passion under the direction of God? What can happen? It's quite amazing. But I want to do this first. You know that song we just heard? It was a song by a Canadian singer-songwriter named Bruce Coburn. And it's kind of a very 80s pop, kind of throw your hip out because you do that dance song, you know? So it doesn't seem like a lucky candidate for a lyric that is great, but it has a great lyric. In fact, it's a great warrior lyric. It doesn't sound like the type of song that would house like warrior poetry, but it does. In fact, in the very third verse, or third stanza, however you'd want to say it, it says this: nothing worth having comes without some kind of fight. Get this. Got to kick at the darkness till it bleeds daylight when your lover's in a dangerous time. That's good. I mean, did you get that? Nothing worth having comes without some kind of fight. You got to kick at the darkness till it bleeds daylight when your lover's in a dangerous time. Because here's the thing, and I'm going to make an assumption. And I'm sure you probably know this. If you've ever tried to do anything good in your life, if you tried big, you ever tried to really stretch yourself, is that the darkness kicks. There's something out there that just kicks against us. There's something out there that when we get in a moment, it kicks and it says, you're not good enough for this. There's something that happened to my buddy Paul that said, she's way out of your league. What are you doing? You're an idiot. Why are you out there? You need to get off. And he listened to that voice and said, it's way too big for me. I'm out of here. It's interesting. The darkness kicks. But what happens when people get their passions right center of God and they learn how to kick back? What could happen? And so we're going to take a look at a couple different stories. So the first story, I've got to take you way back. And these are definitely going to be Cliff Notes versions of these stories. But the first story goes way back to a time when Egyptians ruled. I mean, they were the powerhouse. The Egyptians, of course, if you've done any study of history, which I assume you did, you have done, they did amazing things. They built pyramids, water system, things that we still can't figure out how they pulled it off. But one thing we do know is that they used a slave labor force to do it. They would conquer people, and they would use slave labor to do all this work, to turn straw into brick and to make all these amazing things. And we're going to go back to a point where the Egyptians enslaved a group of people called the Hebrews. And the Hebrews, actually, when they first kind of got under Egyptian rule, kind of had a good deal going. But the deal decayed over generations as new pharaohs, which were the kings of the Egyptians, came in. They kind of forgot the good deal. And one pharaoh in particular just started to see the Hebrews as just a people that he would just take advantage of and just worked very hard, just gave them ridiculous amounts of labor. And so he was a savvy guy. He's a savvy ruler. It's probably why he's king. And so he realizes at some point in history, he says, man, this Hebrew nation is growing really large. Their people are growing. I mean, they've grown as a nation. I mean, they're just stuck in slavery, but they keep reproducing, and they're getting quite large. I mean, this nation's getting big, and what he surmises is this. If we go to war with another country, and the Hebrew people figure out, wait a minute, there's a lot of us. If we actually join the enemy of the Egyptians and fight with them, we could overthrow the people that keep us oppressed in our tyranny. You follow? It's a good thing. And so what he does is this. He says, so this is what we have to do. We have to eliminate the reproductive behavior here. So what we're going to do is this. So he gets a couple Hebrew midwives who help the Hebrew women have children. And he says, I want you to kill all the boys. When they're born, just kill them. They got to go. The girls can live. Boys got to go. No way, we're not going to have this. So the Hebrew midwives kind of go away, and they're like, we fear God more than we fear Pharaoh. I don't like this. But a whole series of strange things start to happen. And one woman in particular gives birth to a child. It was an exceptional child, and she kind of realizes it. So she does everything she can to hide this child, this boy child, this male child, for 3 months. When she realizes she can hide the child no more, she realizes she has to do something. So she makes a basket out of, she gets a bunch of straw and puts tar and pitch and puts it all together, puts the baby in a basket, goes down to the Nile River, puts it on the Nile in the reed grass, and lets it go. A little ways down the river, the Pharaoh's daughter, the very Pharaoh that decreed that all boys have to die, his daughter is out, and she's getting ready to go bathe, and she has her slave girls out with her, and she sees a basket, and she says, go fetch that basket for me. And they go out, and they get the basket. They bring it up, and she says, there's a baby in there. And she's like, oh, my gosh, this is unbelievable. And then she realizes the baby needs to be nursed, and she says, find somebody to nurse this baby back to health. And eventually, she'll take the baby in as her own, and she names him Moses. So this Hebrew baby, who was supposed to be killed at birth, ends up being taken in by the Pharaoh's daughter, the very Pharaoh that ordered all Hebrew boys killed, as one of them, and grows up in the Hebrew household. It's a fascinating story. If you've seen Prince of Egypt, you're completely up to speed, I'm sure. No, okay. So anyway, so this guy Moses, he grows up in the Pharaoh's house. It's an unbelievable story. But one day, he's out, and he has a real heart for his people, because he knows that it's hard. He's a Hebrew. And so one day he's out, and let's take a look at what happens. It's in the book of Exodus, a very telling account here of what happens. We're going to take a look up the screen. It says this. One day, after Moses had grown up, he went out where his own people were and watched them at their labor, at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Glancing this way and that and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hit him in the sand. What happens next is fascinating. So which is what happens. So Moses goes out, he sees his people, and he sees that they're being worked very hard. And he sees, obviously, maybe one's not working hard enough, and an Egyptian starts to beat him. And so he looks around, and he says, this is not right. It's not right that these people are getting treated this way. So he attacks the Egyptian, beats the man to death, hides him in the sand. The next day, he sees a Hebrew and a Hebrew that are quarreling, and they're having it out. And he says to one of them, hey, why would you hit one of your own? And the one Hebrew guy says to him, what are you going to do, kill us like you did the Egyptian? This sends Moses into a panic. And he flees Egypt. He just runs because he knows the word's going to get out. I got to get out of here. And he flees and he runs out into a desert where he thinks he'll have to live forever. He meets up with a family. He takes a wife. He thinks his story in Egypt is over. But the weird thing is it's just begun. Because here's what's going to happen. One day he's out. He's now a shepherd and he's out and he walks up to a bush, this amazing encounter with a bush that's on fire. And God begins to speak to Moses and he says this, hey, I want you to go back to Egypt. And I want you to go to the Pharaoh, and I want you to tell the Pharaoh that I've heard the cries of my people. I've heard their outcry. their outcry against Egypt, and I want you to say to Pharaoh, let my people go. So Moses does, I think most of us would do, he says, no. I think you got the wrong guy. Seriously, I can't. This is crazy. I don't even speak well. I think you want my brother Aaron. God's like, no, I think I got the right guy. I think I know what I'm doing here. And Moses is like, no, seriously, you got the wrong guy. Seriously, I don't think you realize what you're doing here and all that. And God gets a little terse and says, all right, who created who here? I think I know what I'm working with. I put something in you. And understand this, I put a passion in you. And if you start to really put the pieces together, Moses looked over his people and saw them being mistreated and was so moved, but under his own devices, he murdered. But God's saying, I put a passion in you that's wrong, that they shouldn't be treated that way. And I put a passion for your people in you. I know what I'm doing. And if you would center that passion up under me, and if you would get that under my direction, amazing things are about to unfold. Eventually, Moses gets to take his brother Aaron, and he gets to approach the Pharaoh. And this is the scene. He goes in front of the Pharaoh and the entire court, and he walks up to the Pharaoh, and he says, the Lord, the God of Israel, says this, I've heard the cries of my people. And he takes his staff and he says, let my people go. The Pharaoh looks back and says, I don't believe in your God, and I'm not letting your people go anywhere. You see, you know this is the moment, right? You know this had to be a moment where the darkness kicked. Do you know what I mean? I'm sure that Moses started hearing the voices. I can only imagine what the voices sound like. Moses, what are you doing? You're a shepherd. You're way overmatched. You're talking to the most powerful man in the world. Are you serious? You're here with your little staff of wood and your brother? What are you going to do? This is too big. Turn around. Walk away. Get out of here. If you can get out of here, you need to get out of here now. I can only imagine what the voices must have said. But with a passion that was centered under the direction of God, Moses didn't do that. He stays in the moment, kicks back, if you will, and says, let my people go. What happens then is unbelievable. A series of 10 plagues will befall in Egypt. Pharaoh will finally relent and say, fine, get these people out of there. He'll have a change of heart. He'll chase after the Israelites. They'll be out in the middle of the desert. They'll be stuck. They'll be stuck in a sea. They'll have to cross a sea. The Egyptian army will get trapped in the sea that the Israelites cross. It's an amazing story. I'm telling you, you should read your Bible, seriously. The Bible's that good, really. It's a great story. But don't miss this. You get a passion, you get something that's rooted in you that God put there in the first place, but if you leave it to your own devices, all kinds of things can go astray. But if you get that thing centered under God's direction, unbelievable things can happen. And that's what happens with Moses. He frees those people. He's the first abolitionist that I know of. And he takes these people and he takes them out into the desert that he once fled to himself in fear. And now he lives in confidence, taking his people under the direction of God. It's incredible. It's incredible. I know the rest of us would have just further, but not Moses. So now let's go to the second story. It's years and years later. The Israelites will have quite the plight. I mean, they'll have times of great freedom and success. They'll have times where they're just set back. They'll be taken over and overthrown by other people groups. They have just a crazy history. They'll whine, they'll complain, they'll rejoice, and worse. It's all over the place. And now it's years later, and they're free, and they have a king, and his name is Saul. And Saul starts out pretty sharp, but he starts to waver, and one day, in particular, the Israelites have quite the foe in a group called the Philistines. And the Philistines have many. And one day, there's a battle shaping up. So they're out on a battlefield, and the Philistines are on one side of the battlefield, and the Israelites on the other. And what is suggested is this. It's not uncommon in the day to say this. How about instead of having this big bloodbath, instead of us sending out all our warriors, maybe the Philistines suggest, instead of all of us sending out our warriors and all you sending out all your warriors and us having this big bloodbath, instead of it looking like Braveheart, which I'm sure they referenced, by the way, instead of all that mess, how about this? How about we just send out our best warrior and you send out your best warrior and the two shall fight and whoever wins takes it. So if our warrior beats your warrior, then you become our subjects. If your warrior beats our warrior, we become your subjects. How about we work out an agreement like that? Sounds great, right? Oh, yeah. We have a warrior who's 9 foot some odd inches tall. And he's quite the cunning warrior. And we send him out. So the Israel people, the King Saul, and the Israel army, you know what they do? They go, oh. this is way too big. This is way too big. And so Saul is like, he's taking Tylenol, and he's like, I don't know what to do. This is crazy. How do we get into this mess? This is a disaster. We can't beat them. And all the Israelite army, they're sitting there, we're like, we can't do this. We can't take this. They freeze. They just are frozen. But there's a little shepherd boy named David who's out taking care of his flock. And he's a very committed shepherd. He's really serious about taking care of his flock. His father, Jesse, comes to him and says, hey, you know your older brothers are out at the battlefield. I need you to take some supplies to them and kind of give me an idea, give me an update on what's going on. And so David says, sure, I can do it. So mark this. This is the first thing David does. He says, okay, I'll do it. So the next morning, what he does is he goes to another shepherd and says, I need you to watch over my flock so I can go take care of this task that's been assigned to me. You get that? I mean, that's pretty key here. He says, I need you to take care of my flock. He doesn't just drop his responsibilities. He's so serious about taking care of his flock. He's like, I want to make sure they're in good hands before I go off and take care of my assigned task. So don't miss it. He doesn't just drop everything and go, okay, I got any orders, and let's leave his sheep in danger. No. He finds someone to watch over him. So David, after this, goes off to the battlefield, arrives at the battlefield with good supplies, that sort of thing, says, hey, what's going on? Starts striking up a conversation. Some of the people in the army are like, well, you know, if they send out a warrior, we send out a warrior. If they win, we become a subject. If we win, they become a subject. Gets David up to speed. And David's like, what? What is going on? This is crazy. And he's like, he's blown away by it. He's like, wait a minute. Who is this man who defies the armies of the living God? He even says, who is this uncircumcised Philistine? Because apparently that was quite the insult. You know, like, yeah, you're like, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he defies the armies of the living God? And he's like, who? No, this can't happen. And so they're all like, I don't know what you're talking about. And so his brothers even see him and say, what are you up to? And Dave's like, I don't know, can't I even speak? Seriously, what's going on? And so he goes and talks to more people, and you can see it welling in him. You can see this passion starting to well. Like, no, this can't happen. And so David approaches the king, King Saul. And this is what takes place. They'll come up behind me. David said to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. Saul replied, you are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a boy, and he has been fighting from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. Get this. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. Which has a ring of, God bless you, son. Seriously. You know, I don't know. But seriously, you realize what's about to happen is Saul is going to let David, the young shepherd boy, go out and fight on behalf of the entire Israelite army. If he loses, they all lose. But if he wins, they win. This is an incredible scene. What happens next is unbelievable. So David gets consent from the king to go fight. So the king says this, all right, if you're going to go fight, I want to give you the finest gear to fight with. I'm going to give you my gear. So he says, here, take my tunic. So David gets the king's tunic. He says, take my fighting gear. David gets to put on the king's fighting gear, which you know is the best gear because they don't want anything to happen to the king. So David puts on the king's tunic. He puts on the king's fighting gear, the best gear. And then this amazing thing happens. He starts walking around. And he goes, nah, this isn't really working for me. This is not me. This is not who I am. I can't wear this out there. I mean, this is you, but it's not me. And in an amazing display of self-awareness, David says, this is not who I am. If I'm going to do this, if I'm going to stand in this moment, I've got to stand the way that I am. An amazing display of self-awareness. He says, you know, I don't want your gear. What I need is a slingshot and five stones. I'm a shepherd boy. I mean, shepherd boys aren't notoriously, you know, they're not notoriously like, you know, they don't strike fear into people. You know what I mean? Like, no one names their sports teams the Shepherds. You know, like, we're bad. No one does that. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't strike fear in the heart of the opposition. And so, but David says, that's what I am. I'm a shepherd, boy. And so I take my slingshot and my five stones, and this is how I go, which is incredible, and we could learn a lot. Because when you're self-aware, when you realize that God has made you in some unique way, he's given you unique gifts, he's given you a unique passion, and when you get that centered under the direction of God, it's powerful. And it's, and honestly, if you want my opinion, it's why you should take the class Verb at Verb University. I'm not just saying that because I'm teaching it, but I mean, you should take it because that's what it's all about, helping you to understand better who you are, how God has made you, and how if you can get all those things centered in the direction of God, the things you could do with your life are unbelievable. And so David, with a keen self-awareness, knowing exactly who he is and what he isn't, says, that's not what I'll take. I'll take my slingshot and my five stones. And he goes out before this giant of a man called Goliath. And he stands. And you know, there must have been a moment for David where he stood when he walked up to this man who was 9 foot some odd inches. And he probably had a moment of pause, surely. Because, you know, 9 foot some odd inches from a distance looks like one thing. But when you walk up to it, you go, oh my gosh, that guy's big. You know what I mean? Like, for, I'll give you an example. Like, when I was in Hawaii recently, I jumped off a 50-foot cliff into the ocean, which was amazing. But here's what happened to me. I looked at the cliff, and I said, I'm jumping off that. Heck yeah. Climbed up, got up to the edge, and went, okay, wow. This is really high. And it caused me to pause. I mean, I had a moment where I was like, huh, maybe prudence is in going back down. But I didn't. But you know, there was a moment for David where he stood in front of a 9 foot, some odd inch giant and just said, oh wow, he is big, and he is tough. And you know, the darkness started to kick. And you know, the voices had to start. What are you doing here, David? Seriously? You're way overmatched. You are completely and utterly overmatched. This guy is a giant of a man. He is going to destroy you. You're a shepherd boy. That's where you belong. Turn around and walk away. It's too big a moment for you. But when you get a passion like David had, and do you see the passion? The same passion. I mean, he describes his passion. Oh, I take this seriously, he said. When I'm watching my father's sheep, when the lion or the bear came, oh yeah, it was on. You don't touch one of my father's sheep. Because, you know, if I had been the shepherd boy, this is what it would look like. If I'd been out there with a sheep, and a lion or a bear came and took a sheep, I'd have been like, oh, no, don't do it, oh, darn it. Oh, crap. Lost another sheep. Dad's going to be mad. You know, that would have been me, right? But not David. David was like, oh, no, you didn't. I mean, that's David. He goes after the lion or the bear. You seriously goes after the lion or the bear? Risk his own life. If he dies, what's going to happen to the flock then? He's going to lose all the flock. Other lions and bears are going to come and just pillage if he dies, but not David. See, he's got a passion. He's like, I take this very seriously. You don't touch one of the sheep. And as he arrives on the battlefield, you can see it all coming into play. You can see the passion that God gave him. And when he gets it centered under the direction of God, holy cow. And he says, man, it's just like that with this army. This is God's army. So in a sense, it's like he's saying, I have been put over my father's sheep. Do you see it? I'll go. I mean, he's just like one of those lion or the bears that come to pick off one. No, it won't happen. I'm going out there. So in a moment where any one of us would have froze completely, that voice would have started, walk away, it's too big. It's too big for me. But not David. Not David. David stood in that moment and kicked back with a passion as his fuel. Centered under the direction of God, David would fell the giant with one. He took five stones. He only needed one. He drops the giant, walks over, lops his head off with the giant's own sword just for good measure, holds up the head, looks at the Philistines and says, who's your daddy now? The Philistines completely breach the contract and just run for the hills. Suddenly the Israel army that had been paralyzed and free, fear, frozen in the moment, start chasing after him like, we got our own warrior. He's a little shepherd boy. Yeah, I don't know. But suddenly, they're great warriors themselves, right? But see, don't miss it. There is something in you, I promise you, that God has put in you. Left to your own devices, it could get ugly like Moses. But you get it centered, you know, Moses took it out of his own hand and murdered. But you get it centered under the direction of God, watch out. You might do things that you never dreamt possible. Like David, who stands and says, no, I will not freeze up. I will not walk away. This is the moment I was made for. I was made for this moment. David will go on and have an incredible career as king of Israel. He'll have ups and downs. He'll have more moments that we were freezing. He actually makes a lot of makes some mistakes, but he's always honest about it. It's an amazing journey for David. So what's the parallel for us? Rob, so what is passion then? I mean, what is passion like that? Well, like, what is that? Is passion like when I watch two people on a movie screen and they get all like, I don't know, is that passion? Because people call that passion. Well, let's face it, we call a lot of things poorly. I mean, we misuse our own language a lot, do we not? I mean, we're kind of language abusers. I mean, how many of us have done this? Oh my gosh, I love that song. I love that song. I love it. You don't love the song. It's a good song. Or how many people have sat at a restaurant and gone, oh my gosh. Seriously. Doesn't the waiter know it's been 20 minutes since we ordered? I am famished. The Ethiopians are famished, okay? It's likely none of us have ever been famished. But we're like, I've never been this hungry. Seriously. I'm going to die. I mean, that's what we do, right? Let me check around. Yeah, I think most of us could probably live off the fat of the land for a couple meals. Seriously. I mean, I'm speaking for myself. I mean, I know I could, right? But this is what we do with language. We just take it and we misuse it. And I think with passion, it's got really poorly represented. So we've just added definitions. Do you know originally passion, the root word of passion, comes from Christian theology? In fact, where Jesus gives his life, the whole narratives in the Gospels and the Bible, where Jesus gets taken and beaten and crucified and gives his life and is resurrected, those are called the passion narratives. So what is passion? What is passion for us? I would say it's like this. What is it in you that makes you angry? I mean, angry enough that it would become fuel for you in the difficult moments. And I don't mean angry like, you know what, she never cooks for me or rubs my back. Seriously, that's not angry, you know. That's not the anger I'm talking about. That's just selfishness. But what is it that maybe that makes you angry that is unjust for the sake of humanity? So what is it in you that makes you angry enough that it would become fuel for you to make something right that's wrong for the sake of humanity? Something outside of you that suddenly you say, you know, that's wrong. It's wrong that that's happening. So for like Moses, it was like, that's wrong. Look at the way my people are being treated. This is wrong. No one should have to live like this. And it will become fuel for him. When he got it centered into the direction of God, it becomes fuel that will take him through so many difficult moments where most people would just freeze up. For David, it was like, no, my passion is, you don't take what has been put under my authority. You don't touch it. I take this very seriously. It's a passion that God put in him, centered under God's direction. Unbelievable. What is it in you that makes you angry, that's outside of you, that says, for the sake of humanity, I must step into this mode? And if you could get that centered under the direction of God, what might happen? So maybe for you, it's like, it's wrong. I tell you, it's wrong that girls are sold into sex trade, in sex slavery. That is wrong. Somebody should do something. Maybe it's you. Or maybe for you, it's like, maybe it's homelessness. I know people, homelessness makes them angry. They're like, it is so wrong that we still have homeless. We have so much affluence in our country. Why are there still homeless people? It's just wrong and it makes them angry. I tell you, homelessness doesn't make me angry. I'll just be honest with you. It makes me sad. Yeah. I mean, I see homeless and I go, oh, that's so sad. And I know, and it moves me towards kindness, but often when I engage with homeless people, I feel awkward because I'm not angry, I'm sad. I'm like, oh, I'm so sad. But I know people that get angry. They're like, it's like this right-sided anger that says, this is not right. And they have let that become fuel for them in moments where the rest of us would freeze up, and they've gotten homeless people off the streets, moved them into new homes, gotten them jobs, gotten them back functioning in society. It's beautiful. So what is it in you? What is it in you that burns? That needs to become fuel that burns for you, that if you centered under the direction of God, there would be no stopping you. In moments where the rest of us would just simply sin and go, this is way too big a moment. I can't handle it. That you would stand in that moment and say, no, I'm kicking back. Because this is just wrong. So that's what we'd like to ask you this week. I think everyone hopefully got cards as they came in. Did you get a card? Did everybody have a card to fill out? Did that happen? I'm looking around. It doesn't look like anyone has cards. So, yeah, you're going to get a card. Someone's going to help us out with that. You're going to get some cards to fill out. Last week, if you were here, we had cards to fill out. The top portion this week is the same as last week's top portion. But don't think if you were here last week and you filled out that top portion that it means you shouldn't have to fill out this week, because you do need to, because the bottom question is the real question we want you to hit this week, which is basically this. What is your passion as you understand it? And maybe you have a new definition. Maybe you thought before it was like, I've always had this passion to sing, like they do on American Idol. You know, they go and they're like, I'm a singer. I have to sing. And then they go, okay, great, sing for us. And they go, you know, and they're like, you're not a singer. And they're like, my mama said I could sing. And it's like, your mama didn't love you. You can't sing. Seriously, it's not good for you. So don't. It's not that kind of thing. Maybe you just like music a lot, but it doesn't mean you should do it. Sometimes you need a community to help you define that. Again, I'd encourage you to take Verb. But maybe something under these new parameters. What is it in you that you see as unjust that you just say, that's wrong? That shouldn't happen. And if you got that type of passion centered under God's direction, what might happen? So if you would fill those out, and again, if you weren't here last week and you didn't fill out the top portion, we'd love for you to do that. We'd love to know some areas that you're perhaps interested in serving here at Verb. Somebody would be contacting you about that. So take a couple minutes.